Thanks for staying on with us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Shortly, we'll have James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania. Earlier on, you just heard from Ben Sofian, the Executive Director of Merdeka Center, as well as Andrew Koo, the advocate and solicitor, the lawyer. A lot has transpired today. One thing that is for sure is that the parliamentary sitting that was meant to take place on Monday was prolonged and therefore was extended based on the statement that was given by the Director General of Health. And then, of course, we know for a fact that the replacement for that Monday sitting is not discussed by any members of the Parliament or by the Prime Minister or the Secretary of the Dewan Rakyat. So that one missing day is now, one would argue, no longer existent. And of course, the political wrangling of the week that has happened over the week does not discuss the very dire consequences that have happened today. Today, Malaysia has recorded the highest number of positive daily cases, nearly 20,000 or 19,819. What's more important to discuss is the highest daily death rate at 257 deaths. 257 deaths, you know, that brings to about 9,855 deaths. That's close to 10,000 people having been brought dead or died in the ICU or any other ways of dying. And of course, I'd like to argue, not many health professionals would like to argue this point, but I can. I'm not a health professional. I can speculate. My speculation is that the 9,855 COVID deaths are those deaths that have been tested for COVID that we know have died because of COVID. Who knows how many Malaysians have died or how many people have died in Malaysia because of COVID or because they were not tested. We just buried them. And so that number does pushes it up more than 10,000. Amidst all this, we know that a lot of hospitals are now struggling to keep up with the strain of managing patients, COVID-19 patients. We know that at least four hospitals in Klang Valley have been turned into dedicated COVID hospitals. We know that some other hospitals around the country are now facing the kind of dire strain of managing COVID. And if you would like to argue about the timeline, cases are rising across Malaysia outside of Klang Valley 2 weeks after an uncontrolled or unfettered movement following the Eid celebration or Hari Raya Haji celebrations. You know, we don't see this happening immediately. We see this happening 2 to 3 weeks after Raya Haji. So is this it? Is this the aftermath or the after effects following the control, the disregard of the movement control order that was imposed by the government, and Malaysians up and ended the whole conversation and just left Klang Valley to visit their dearly loved ones outside of the Klang Valley, and in process have infected and have put those places outside of Klang Valley in strain. And you know, it's not just about all this, it's about what needs to be done moving forward, right? 7.4 million Malaysians have been double vaccinated. I am fortunate enough to be counted as one of them. I got my double vaccination on Monday. But only 14.7 million Malaysians have gotten at least first dose of the vaccination. You know, when we look at adults, 30% are being double vaccinated, while that number seems small, we are the fastest country vaccinated per million. Bloomberg extrapolation shows that if we continue at this rate, meaning that we keep it up at 450,000 to 500,000 daily vaccinations, we can get over 75% vaccinated, fully vaccinated in 2 months' time. That's the projection by Bloomberg. This very same projection, Bloomberg extrapolated to be 8 months to be fully vaccinated just 2 months ago. Get it? 2 months ago, because the vaccination rate was not that aggressive, Bloomberg at that point in time extrapolated it will take 8 months. Now, because of Operation Surge, And all the other efforts that the coordinating minister is doing, that number has, that duration has now reduced to 2 months. COVID is still the topic of the day. COVID must always be the conversation of the people right now. But we can't keep talking about COVID because of the political wrangling. And it is because of that, there's a lot of frustration that is currently happening. My good friend, Nathaniel Tan, has instituted a hunger strike today. All the best to him. But these are the kind of measures that individual Malaysians are now taking it upon themselves in order for them to express their discontent into the mismanagement of the country or the perceived mismanagement of the country. There's a lot to unpack. I hearken back to the statement that Ben Sofian as well as Andrew Hu mentioned just now in the Consider This. There's a lot of events that might unfold in the next few days, and we have to keep close eye on those events. For now, we'll go for one break. When we come back, we'll discuss more with Professor James Chin. Thanks for staying on with us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're continuing our coverage on the ongoings of the political drama that is unfolding in the country. If you've missed the events that have transpired so far early on today, around afternoon, the Prime Minister says that he acknowledges that 8 MPs from UMNO has no longer his support. And of course, the conversation now is whether or not he still has the support. According to the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, he says that he has the support and that he will test the majority of his support in the parliament in September. Towards later in the afternoon, around 4 or 5 p.m., the coalition of MPs from the opposition bloc has stated that they want to have the parliamentary proceedings as early as possible, in fact, no later the 9th of August. And in this coalition of support, it is signed by the president of PKR, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, Haji Sabu, the president of Amanah, as well as Lim Guan Eng. Also, along with the signatories include Shafiq Abdal of Warisan, Mukhris Mahathir of Pejuang, Madia Stangau, UPKO, PSB Barubian, as well as Syed Saddiq and Mazli, formerly of Bersatu, currently independent. One of them is actually from MUDA. Together, if you do the maths, it's actually more than 110. In fact, it should come to around 115. It's from the opposition bloc. So do we have a political crisis at hand? We do, unfortunately. The question now is, how bad will the situation be? So joining us right now is James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania. James, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do a quick recap into what you think are the scenarios that might be played out in the next few days.
Thank you very much for having me. So in terms of the scenario, basically, there's only two scenarios. One is that Muhyiddin will delay the sitting until September, the dates that he won, and he'll put out all sorts of blocks, roadblocks for the opposition. The second scenario, of course, is that the opposition can put enough political pressure and try to influence the king or some other groups so that they can put tremendous pressure on Muhyiddin to force him to hold the sitting in August. The idea is that they feel that the sooner they can get the sitting done, this means that there's less chance that Muhyiddin can go around and influencing or bring some of the opposition MPs to his camp. If you were to ask me, I would say that it's very likely that Muhyiddin will get his way, that you will not see a sitting in 4 or 5 days' time. It will probably be earliest, will probably be early September.
Okay, with this in mind, do you think that there might be some other avenues for the opposition to move ahead and try to force the hand of the king to make it work? I understand that you were saying earlier that Tan Sri Muhyiddin will be placed under tremendous pressure, but isn't he, you know, isn't the worst over, so to speak, for Tan Sri Muhyiddin?
No, the worst is not over yet. Obviously, he's trying to buy as much time as possible. But of course, the king can you know, if the opposition want to make an appeal to the king, of course, can make a request. He can't order Muhyiddin to do anything, but he can make a request for Muhyiddin to hold an earlier date. Given what transpired in the last week and a half, I think if he were to make a formal request to Muhyiddin, Muyadin will definitely have to move the dates, but he will not move the dates to next week.
In the press statement that was issued by the Prime Minister's office following the PM's special announcement just now, special address, it says that the reason why he wants to move it to September is because he asked the King if he can have it in September. And in the press report, it says that the King agrees for it to be in early September. Sorry, in September. It doesn't have to be early. If this formal request, for instance, from the King to have the sitting earlier than September, wouldn't this look bad on the King? Because on one hand, he agrees to Muhyiddin that it should be done in September, but because things are developing, the King changes his mind and wants to have it earlier. Wouldn't this paint a bad picture or poor picture on the Yang di-Pertuan Agong?
Not really. You have to remember, on an ordinary time, they actually meet each other every week before the cabinet meeting. So we know that political issues are discussed at the meeting, and there's no reason why the King can't change his mind and ask for earlier sitting. But again, this depends on the scenario that will be unfolding over the next few days. What I expect over the next few days is that more and more MPs will come out to say which side they support. And I suspect Muhyiddin's boys are actually going around now trying to collect as many SDs as possible and also try to lock in as much support as possible. One of the things that you need to remind yourself constantly is the fact that the margin is actually very small on both sides. So Muhyiddin basically needs to grab another 20 MPs in order to have a bare majority. So it is all doable over the next few days. But the key is that he's not very confident. He wants a bit more time. Probably we're talking about 3 or 4 weeks in order to really bunker down and get support and bring more MPs over to his side.
The MP for Subang, Wong Chan, tweeted in the afternoon just now saying that assuming Tan Sri Muhyiddin has 115 and the opposition has 105, knowing that 8 has left, bringing Tan Sri Muhyiddin's numbers to around 107. In order for him to have a majority, he needs to get 4 MPs from the opposition to get to his side. Now, of course, this is just some simple calculation that is being done by Wong Chan, but essentially you don't really need up to 20. Am I right, James? You just need, I don't know, 4 or 5, that's enough.
No, I think what I meant was that the margin is very small. So we're talking about 10 to 20 MPs. The other thing to remember is that all these numbers being thrown around doesn't mean anything. The only numbers that matter is during the sitting, how people vote. So very often you find that when people does all these calculations, right, it doesn't come up to fruition on the actual day. If you remember last year in February, all sorts of numbers were being thrown around. In the end, it doesn't make a difference. So this is a crucial vote of confidence in the Muhyiddin administration. And whether it's 4 or 5 or whether it's 10 to 20, I think what really matters is that we actually have a real sitting and the MPs actually get to vote. I think that is really crucial in order to stabilize the political situation in the country. Right now, with all these things going on in the background, I think the country is really damaged by this political instability.
And speaking about damage, today we registered the highest count ever for positive cases, close to 20,000, 19,819 to be precise, bringing to total active cases to close to cases that have been positive to 1.2 million. Active cases is into the hundreds of thousands. Nothing has been said about COVID by all the policymakers. That's how sad the situation is. While there is a health crisis currently raging through the country, not one politician has come out to address the COVID situation, at least for today. Do you think that the population is going to stand up for this? Do you think that the people have had enough with the politicking that is going on?
I think the people has had enough since last year. But the reality of Malaysian politics is that the small people in the street, the ordinary people like myself, we don't count in a political process. This is really a game for the Malay establishment, the Malay elite. Nobody else can play the game and they don't really care what the normal people in the street thinks. In terms of your question about COVID, it really doesn't matter whether you have a functioning government or not. The reality is that we are at a wave now and the numbers are going to get worse. It doesn't matter who's in government. The numbers are going to get a lot worse before it comes better. So even though Muyadin has pushed it to September, but by the time we reach September, the numbers will still be very bad for him. So it really doesn't matter which government we're talking about. The reality is that this virus is sort of out of control in Malaysia now. And the only way to deal with this is to get everybody vaccinated. And the earliest, based on the projections I've seen, the earliest that we'll see a turnaround will probably be from October onwards.
You said something earlier about the role of royals in the Malaysian political system, something to the effect that you do not want to create a system where it can be chosen by one man or one institution. It has to go back to the rakyat. Are you alluding to the fact that perhaps one way to resolve this is to let everything go as status quo, and then eventually when it's safe to have an election, we have the election then? Is that the best way forward?
No. The best way forward is obviously for Muhyiddin to test the level of confidence in the August House, but also to lock in an election date. If you go back and look at the statements he made, he has made a statement at least four times saying that once the COVID situation has stabilized, that he's quite willing to go for general election. So we have to hold him to his word, and that a general election can actually be called probably in the second quarter of next year. So once everything is stabilized, you really need a general election to decide, who is capable of ruling this country. Because even a vote of confidence doesn't say much about which side is going to win. Because as I mentioned earlier, the margins are so small, I don't see each side getting a big majority, whichever side they win. So the only way out of the situation now is really a general election. And we have to force whoever is in charge to locking a date. My take is that next year is a good time to go for general election. Sarawak is going to hold his general election, assuming that the king is not going to lift the emergency. He's going to hold it sometime in February or March. And I think that will be a good time to hold a general election as well.
So you're suggesting something like a tandem state election with the general election of the country.
Yes.
But that is, of course, one way of doing things. Another way of doing things is, of course, the national unity government, previously mooted by Tun Mahathir when the shenanigans were happening in February last year. But that didn't go down too well with a lot of parties, so to speak. Do you think that the national unity government is a good idea to have now?
No, I think national unity government is just another excuse for the current elite to carry on. How should I put this in a very simple way? Basically, what we're seeing is a failure of the entire political establishment. So we really need an election to elect new people, or at least get a confirmation from the ordinary rakyat that they're quite happy what's going on. My take is that this coming general election will be very difficult for both sides. Because in terms of the things they've done during the emergency and during the COVID crisis, I think if you were to look carefully, both sides doesn't come out looking good. I'm talking about both the opposition and the government. The other big problem with government national unity is that very often you get lots of people that you do not want to be in government to be part of that unity government, because the idea behind national unity government is that everybody will have to be represented. And we know there are a couple of MPs or groups out there who really should not be in government. And if you set up a government of national unity, these people will be in government.
All right, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll have a continued conversation with James Chin. Thanks for staying on with us. We have with me Professor James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania. James, one quick look into Sabah and Sarawak right now. They seem to be pretty quiet. In fact, some GPS MPs were on Clubhouse last night, intermingling with the rakyat, chatting about politics. It's just bizarre. These MPs should have been in the parliament, but they're on Clubhouse talking. On one hand, I can't blame them. They were stopped from entering the parliament. FRU stopped them. But one question that was asked by the MP, was asked to the MP of Sibuti, was on where does GPS stand? He gave a very simple answer. He says that right now GPS is still with Perikatan Nasional, but at the same time, there is no clear stance on whether or not they will continue to support. So he doesn't give a strong assurance that GPS will continue to support this administration. Do you feel that GPS is going to be yet another kingmaker in this scenario?
I think for the parties in Sabah and Sarawak, their first instinct is always to go the winners. So whoever forms or have the capability to form the federal government, they'll try to jump to that camp as fast as possible. And when I say they'll join them, I do not mean they'll join the coalition, but they will ally themselves to whoever controls the federal government. They've been doing this for many years, so I don't expect them to break that habit. So in some ways, the MP last night was simply telling the truth.
Okay. Final question, James, before we part our ways. I want to tap into your, the crystal ball here. I want to ask you, what do you think will happen tomorrow and the day after and this week? What definitive action do you think will take place over the next few days?
Right. So on the side of the government, the Muhyiddin administration, I expect them to try to show that they're still running the government. Everything is running smoothly. They'll still issue statements about how well they're doing. Everything is running smoothly. They'll try to behave like there's no crisis. On the opposition side, I expect them to hold lots of social media events, a lot of press release. So they're trying to show that there's tremendous unhappiness among the rakyat. They'll also show that there's a political crisis brewing, and the only way out is to have a confidence vote as soon as possible. So you will have two different realities being blasted out to the rakyat, trying to convince the rakyat on the one hand, everything is normal. On the other side, they'll try to convince the rakyat and the international community that everything is falling apart.
Sorry. I wanted to part ways, but hang on. Do you feel that they still believe that the rakyat is going to believe their version of reality when clearly, just look at the numbers, just look at the crisis that is befalling us, just look at the businesses, all the shops have shuttered, many of them permanently. Do you think that there is still an appetite for rakyat to believe their version of reality?
Yes, because there's always a group of people who, for whatever reasons, mostly because of the patronage system, they will support the government in power. So those guys will go along with the government, regardless of what they believe in, because they're afraid that if the other side take over, they'll lose all their access and they lose all their benefits. So there's always a group of people who will go with the government no matter what.
All right, thank you. That was James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania. Continue to stick with us. There's a lot more that needs to be unpacked. We have breaking news coverage throughout the entire evening for today. Just stay on with this channel. Until then, my name is Ibrahim Sani. You're watching Notepad.